He has my address. Now, K1H5A4.
Oh, you got it right there.
K1H5A4.
Yeah, these darn code numbers are so stupid.
They're stupid. H5A4. When I was here in 62, now who was the Anglican minister that was here? Anyway, he was an archbishop or something. I mean, he came in. Whatever it was, I said, well, of course, I'm not a real Yukoner, you know. And he said, you're a Yukoner by apostolic succession. And I thought that was a good one.
I should say you are. If anyone would be, you would be.
Well, I'm afraid there are many others perhaps in the same position as I, and I have been lucky that Grandpa, you know, was so well-known that has made me feel good and make me love it so much more.
You spent your childhood then in Vancouver?
Ottawa.
In Ottawa.
In Ottawa, yes. Mm-hmm.
But your father was working as a mining engineer in the Canadian West.
Yeah, up to 14, then he was home until 26 when he went into the Omanika.
So by that time, his family was fairly well grown.
Well, I had started to work, and my one ambition was to come on out here. So, of course, salaries weren't very big at the time. And I saved half my salary every month till I had enough money to come out. And I visited Dad and came on up here.
And you visited your father and then came up to Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
What year was that?
1929.
Tell me how you came from Ottawa to the West and then up. Describe the transportation.
By train. Of course, this is my first sally away from home, any distance. Alone, and I was, when I saw the mountains, I didn't know, to me, I couldn't express myself. It was, the sun was shining on the clouds, and it was just like gold. And, I guess I'm one of those people who get all excited about these things, but I don't think I left the window of the train. I didn't want to miss one solitary.
You hadn't seen mountains like that.
Never.
There's them in the east.
Oh, no. Well, we have the oldest mountains in the east, but
you don't
not
have
the
a
biggest.
Spectacular.
No. And then I visited an aunt in Vancouver for a couple of days and took the boat up
to Skagway.
Mm-hmm. And it was just heavenly.
Isn't that a beautiful trip?
It was a marvelous trip. And we have never stopped talking about that trip. We always suggest that people go up the inside passage and to get off and visit all the museums en route, because you do pick up a great deal of information.
So then in 1929, can you remember Skagway? What was it, small town?
It was a lovely little town. You sailed into there and you looked up this sheer rock, and the boys in the ships used to get up and paint the names of their boats on the thing. Of course, today it's all overgrown. You can't see any of the names. There was a lovely little tea room there, I remember, the Rose Tea Room, I believe it was called. And it was a place a man had tame fish in the little creek, and you could go down and feed the fish. And the flowers were simply gorgeous. Of course, I went up to see Soapy Smith's grave. Dad knew him, and Grandpa knew him, and then Reed's grave too. I just didn't miss anything there at all, but it was a lovely little place. And I stayed at the Pullen House, which, it was super. She had more artifacts, you know. And I remember, I guess it was in 29, yes, this woman from Palo Alto. When she found out that the Pullen House was right next to the jail, she was all for going at once, because she said she didn't know whether she was going to get killed or what.
In 1929?
Mm-hmm.
It was rather calm in 29.
Very.
I know, but you see, the jail was right next door, and this is what threw her.
Yeah.
And then coming back from White Horse, we stopped, and I went in on the Turan and the Tushai to Atlin.
And what is the Turan and the Tushai?
Boats.
Oh, boats. Mm-hmm. You went into Atlin,
mm-hmm.
B.C.
B.C. And as far as I'm concerned, the glacier there is the most beautiful I've ever seen. In fact, I got in quite an argument with someone at home. I said, it's way ahead of Lake Louise, you know. And I honestly think it is. It's a long distance from the hotel, but the reflections are the most perfect you'd ever, ever want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And that was taught Mrs. Smith, the commissioner's wife, knew. They have a camp in Atlin, too, and so she was agreeing with
she
me.
That,
yes, very much so.
Perhaps it's because the Canadian North, I mean, the real North, has not been discovered yet by the tourism.
Well, I just hope they don't develop it commercially to the point of ruining it.
Mm-hmm.
I would prefer to see it as a tourist attraction rather, and they can have trades and things like this, but don't spoil it.
Well, that's in British Columbia.
Well, it's just
their national park system. They've got away from the Canadian federal national park system like Banff and Lake Louise, and there they got lots of commercial places. The trend is now everything is on the outside. They're not in the
view area itself.
Mm-hmm.
They're separated. But like Kluane is going to be the commercial part of in Kluane. It's not going to be there. It's going to be right out around Haines. They're not going to.
Haines Junction.
Mm-hmm. Haines Junction. They're not going to have the.
Well, this is what I'm very happy about. I want to see it kept so beautiful because it is. It's just the most beautiful place that everywhere you look, you see some picture. And it's just one continuous picture after the other.
One of the bonuses of our trip here this weekend is we have learned how the Canadians are so interested and are so productive in their historical site preservation, which is something that we really need to work on in Alaska. And this that we're just talking about, the tourism attractions, they're done a little bit differently. And some of these concepts perhaps have occurred to some of our leaders or our legislators, but haven't been implemented. But I can assure you, when I get back, we'll be full of information for our historical society from that aspect. But to get back to your first trip here, you took the White Pass from Skagway. And did that take you one day at the time, or was that a two-day trip?
One day
up the pass. Mm-hmm. And of course, we stopped at Bennett and the church.
The Presbyterian Church?
It impressed itself on me so much. I have never forgotten it. And I think it's one of the most beautiful sights. As I was telling Roy, I said, if I ever win the sweepstake, I'm going to see that you get somebody to get that thing fixed up, and I'd love to hear them play, have a record playing, "Unto the Hills Do I Lift Up My Longing Eyes," because it just goes together.
Mm-hmm. Is the church still fairly well preserved?
Not really, but they are doing something with it.
They are?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so it won't fall, it won't crumble down or something?
Mm-hmm. No, it's in the stabilization period now, and it will be restored.
But it is a beautiful little building.
See, you know, they have a partnership, more or less, with British Columbia. They were always with Bennett in the leader of the Social Credit Party in B.C. He didn't want to do anything. To in the North Country, talked about what he did in the roads, he built and everything else, but he wasn't doing anything in the North Country.
Mm-hmm.
And the territorial government and the federal government wouldn't work with them.
Mm-hmm.
But now that Barrett is right away, they've got the right way from Skagway, for the road from Skagway through to Carcross, and they're all working together now.
Good.
And the parks branch of, they're all working on that. That building will be, it's being re.
Well, is that the road that they had started some years ago, way up high?
They started in Skagway.
Yeah.
they were been pushing for it all the time. The Alaska.
Well, I don't think I'd be I'd be terrified. Because it's so high up and so such
well,
a sheer
drop. Well, of course, it won't have no sheer drops like that. The grades will be made properly. It's mm-hmm. an expensive road through that rocky part. That's the most expensive part to make the road.
But, yes, that part. But it is the most beautiful trip.
Then you went to White Horse and remained there till a boat.
I went in, and I was with two ladies from Phoenix, whom I'd met on the way, and into a little drugstore. And this old gentleman shuffled out, and he said, "Tourists?" We said, "Yes." He said, "Americans?" I said, "Don't call me an American." And he said, "Where do you come from?" I said, "Ottawa." He said, "Did you ever know Morley Ogilvy?" Well, I said, "It was my father." He said, "Everything in the shop is yours if you want it."
What a beautiful introduction to
And then he took us down to the ship and the Casca, uh-huh. and he introduced me to the captain. He says, "Now you've got royalty aboard, see that she's treated right." You know, I just felt like crawling in a hole.
Wonderful.
But I did enjoy that. That was a marvelous trip. And we had Mrs. George P. McKenzie on, who was the wife of the former commissioner. And she was coming up to paint her cabin and paper it in 2 days. Well, we got stuck on a sandbar, and Mrs. McKenzie was fussing and fuming. The captain put her off ashore, and we just got her off about 5 minutes, and we started down the river. But we got her here, and she didn't get her house painted or papered. And we went, and I stayed 2 weeks with the McCarters. And she
Did you know the McCarters?
Not before.
But they knew your father, or?
I don't know. I guess Alec didn't know, but it was through Oswald Finney. He was up here, you see. He was the commissioner at the time, too. And so I stayed there with him and Jean and I had a grand old time, and we went around. We went out. I was on the dredge, and then we went out to. We were in the Gold House. Lifted a great big pan. We didn't lift it. They just let us hold it nicely. About $3,000 worth of nuggets in it, and I visited around. We went out to the cottage at Rock Creek and fished, and
of course you visited the discovery site.
Not that I didn't get up there until 1962.
But how many dredges were there? Do you recall approximately?
Well, I don't know. There were two. It was number one and number four that I knew I was on.
When was that, 29? There would be number two was a big dredge. Number four was a big dredge. I was in the Klondike Valley.
Well, that's the one I was on.
Lower Dominion, there was...
Number four was on the Klondike Valley?
Yeah.
And number
two was in the Klondike Valley.
On the Klondike Valley.
Yeah, number two was right down at that time. It would be in the vicinity of Ogilvy Bridge, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then there were the two of them were on the Klondike
Valley.
Yeah,
they're both. Number four was up near the Arlington.
And that dredge that's up the El Dorado Road now, is that number four?
That's number four, but that's a new one. That was built in 35.
I see.
These other ones were built in around 1912, 10 and 12. And then over the hill in 29, over in the Dominion side, there was number four and number five. They were, and then there was one on Hunker, number 11 on Hunker.
So that makes five?
It was about five at that time.
Five dredges in operation. This is about the time that the dredging began in the Fairbanks area. Was 1927 they completed the construction of I think about four dredges, and then in 1928 they started the active dredging, the active mining.
Well, they brought the water in and used to wash the dirt down for the men to pan too. You know how they used to bring it in on these pipes and hose it down?
Oh, you mean the hydraulics?
Hydraulics.
Oh, that was a good one.
Well, Jackson, and what was the
Jackson,
one?
Jackson.
Yes. Well, I panned gold there. I got a little bit color.
See, they brought the water in from the 12 mile, 12 12 Mile River. That was the big ditch, about 100 and over 100 miles long, about 100 miles long anyhow. Mm-hmm. It was built of flume. Well, that was built early though, of course. The Gooks were mining in about five, I guess it was, mm-hmm. four or five.
That's the Guggenheim?
Guggenheim, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was called the Yukon Gold.
That was, Treadwell was in that too.
Well, he was, he started, there's quite a history attached to it. I wouldn't like to say just what it is because I'm not, didn't read up on it too much. It's hard to read up on. But Treadgold got the Gooks interested and he formed a company and then he had a terrific lot of shares in it. So he was a promoter, Treadgold. Mm-hmm. He had owned half the country at one time, but he ended up fighting with the Yukon Consolidated Gold Corporation. It wasn't then, it was half a dozen different names. But they ended up a fight with them in the courts, and he ended up going. He was crooked to God's own name.
Don't you love those? I think that's a very interesting description of a person.
So your first visit up here then was just revisiting spots that you'd heard your father and your grandfather
yes.
talk about. Had you met quite a few people at the time then who knew and worked with your
I met more people, and I just met so many people I couldn't remember the names.
But of course most of the people in 1929 who had remained in Dawson had to have known your father. And
known or known of him, you yes. know. And mm-hmm. When I was here in 62, I came up and I visited all the old timers in the hospital. Alec Adams was still alive then.
Adams, yeah, that's
and
right.
He knew Daddy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting to meet them and just say a few words.
You came back in 1962 and you've been back since then, haven't you?
Here I am. No, I was out. I just got to Whitehorse in 38. And then I came up this year. I just felt I had to because I talked it over with my sister. I said, I feel that we should do something because we probably won't be around by the 100th anniversary. So I said, let's have two pictures of Grandpa copied and we'll present one to Dawson because I still feel Dawson's, well, I feel Dawson is the center of the Yukon. For convenience sake only, I believe this is why they put the capital down to Whitehorse, mm-hmm. the headwaters there.
Mm-hmm. That was it. There was a hub of mm-hmm. the highway gone through there.
Yeah.
So I gave them one too.
In Whitehorse.
Yes, they would have one, and we had it. I was thinking, what will I do? And when I was into the photography shop, and Mrs. Evans said, "Well, we usually put them on green. They look so nice." And I was lying there in bed one night, and I said, "I'm going to get some Ogilvy tartan. I think that would be good."
Oh,
so I asked Mr. Evans, and he said, "Oh, yes, but he's all you Scotsmen, you always stay together. You always have to have your tartan." And so
I think that's a beautiful idea.
Well, Grandpa's sitting down there where they took a picture down and put Grandpa there. And they have this one case with Grandpa's things in it. And the librarian or the lady in charge said, curator, yes. She said, "We're going to try and start it here. This will be the first one and build it around. Let it develop around this way." And I had given McCain in 62, which had been presented to Grandpa. They found the wood way down, and it was a soft wood, and there's the most beautiful gold band up. It had been presented to him. And it was given to my brother, but he said, "No, you keep it, and you do what you want with it." And I've discussed with my nephews now, and they said, "Well, no, I think you better give it to, or loan it to a museum anyway, because it would be much safer, it wouldn't be lost." And this is what I've been doing.
Good. But to go back to 1929, when you made your... You didn't make the decision to come in 1929. You probably had thought of coming to the Yukon for
we
many
did.
Years.
Well, we were. Father said, "You're not going anywhere until you know your own country. You travel in your own country and know what you're talking about." So this was the way I got to know the North.
Mm-hmm. And you said that you saved half of your salary. What did you do? What kind of work did you do?
Oh, I was working on the election staff, just a clerical job, $60 a month.
And did you remain in that business all of your life, or that profession?
In the government, yes. Mm-hmm. I ended up in customs and excise.
In Ottawa.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. But it's a holiday out here means more and gives you more vitality to go back. You have so much to think about, and you mesh things together more then.
Is there any chance that you'll make this trip with the International Sourdough Reunion this
year? I really can't. I had hoped to do it, but I had written to Crystal and explained to her, and I can't do it. So this is why I said I'm going up now for the 17th. The 17th is really the thing as far as I'm concerned.
I think it's a very significant date in this time.
It is, definitely.
Crystal McQuestion Morgan, it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine, I think you might have met her the other day, Kay Kennedy, is in town, and she's visited Dawson before, but she has met Crystal McQuestion. But of course, our historical society doesn't have the funds to send someone everywhere to interview these people.
Well, she'll be on the international. She'll be on that cruise.
When I got the note back from this gentleman saying that they were all filled up, I thought that was just the challenge I needed. I'll get aboard.
I don't know whether Bill Kelsey is still here, because he's had a great deal to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But his wife was freezing. She thought, I said, come on over to the dance with us. And she said, oh no, I'm going home, I'm too cold.
Oh, that's a good place to warm up. Is it a Yukon Order of the Pioneers? If they're anything like our pioneer dances, they're wonderful.
Oh, they had a wonderful party the other night.
That's a good place.
And the costumes were all so beautiful.
Are you taking any mementos home with you this trip, Miss Wokelby?
Oh, well, I bought a lot of little things to take home to all the members of the family.
Your nephews travel up here?
No.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't be surprised if David and perhaps Gordy do, because they're the mining engineers. My sister's family, they're not inclined in that way at all.
Mm-hmm.
But my brother's family are, and David has got his M.A. from McGill in mining engineering, and he's a metallurgist from UBC.
Mm-hmm.
So he's really there, and Gordy is doing open pit mining in charge of the open pit mining at Sherritt Gordon in northern Manitoba. So that you couldn't be any more involved.
Yes.
In
they'll be here then eventually.
Oh, I think they will come up.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly am going to get after David anyway.
It'd be a nice holiday for them to take a drive up.
Oh, they're out in Vancouver, Victoria now. Mm-hmm. To see their stepmother, but I never know where he's going to be shifted off to, and sometimes the holiday length of time isn't quite long enough for them.
Do you recall any of the exciting stories your grandfather would tell you as a child? I'm sure you must have sat around and listened with fascination to some of them.
Oh, well, he was always telling us about the beauties of the flowers.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of the things, and there was something about hills, little humps are up way up near the north.
And Muskeg?
No, there were. They didn't realize how they got there. No, it was a.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I think it's geologically they call it a pingo, P-I-N-G-O, and it's a permafrost formation where water will seep in the ground, and then in the winter it freezes, and then gradually more will seep in the summer, fall, though the underground is permanently frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just gradually builds.
Well, he used to tell stories about this, and people wouldn't believe him. You know, thought he was crazy. But
some of the early people thought they were early burial.
Well, they didn't know what it was, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing he was telling us about, he was fishing, and he had this watch he'd been given by some organization, and he leaned over and he dropped the watch, and oh, he took the everything, directions, and he was going to come back the next morning, see if he could find it. But they come back, and here was a fish swimming around crazily.
Swimming around his watch?
No, the fish had swallowed the watch, and the weight of it, you see, had the fish off balance. He got the fish, opened it up, and there's the watch.
What a wonderful story.
That's a fish story.
It's not, Mike. Bill has that watch, and that you can see one of the teeth marks of the fish on it.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating story.
But he was quite a raconteur, and of course he'd be up at the local hotel, and you know how the men all gather. And they say he could keep them going for a whole evening. But he all the tricks he'd pull on people and do, you know, he just was full of life.
Mm-hmm.
He was quiet in many ways, but enjoyed.
Did he ever tell you any bear stories that frightened you?
No, never. No.
You know, the old-timers never did anything that was spectacular or out of the way as far as they were concerned.
It was
in a day's work. They'd tell you these other little incidents, like the watch incident. That was a funny little incident. But as far as their work is concerned and their trips, they never really had any hardship.
No, well,
to hear them talk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, this is true. That was their way of life, and they lived it as it came day by day.
There's an old gentleman in Fairbanks named Ed Janow. He's lived a quiet life, all, you know, gone about his way. He came in 1903, and he worked in Dawson, up El Dorado. Then he went into the 40 Mile River country. He's been there ever since. He's been in that area until now. He's 90. He just can't be there by himself.
No.
So he sold his claims. But he spent almost 70 years in 40 Mile, and it took three contacts by me before he said, "Oh, lady, I don't think I have anything to tell you that would be of interest." And I said, "Well, Mr. Janow, just the fact that you came in the early years," and I met him first at the Pioneer meeting, then I went to see him, and then finally I took my husband, who knew the old-timer who lived next door to him, kind of watches after him. And Mr. Janow discovered that my husband and he were good friends, and had been friends for many, many years. And so I invited him to come over, and we chatted. He thought maybe I was all right to talk with. We talked. I think I got 2.5 hours tape from him, and we just... I just placed my microphone where he wasn't even aware of it. And he spoke and talked, and I'd ask him questions, and finally I knew. He keeps regular meal hours, and I just had to leave because it was getting to be 12:30, and I knew it was his lunchtime. So as I left, I said, "Well, I certainly do appreciate your taking this time." And he said, "Oh, I didn't have very much to say." I said, "I'd like to come back someday with a man I know who's been in this..." He went on one stampede, and he said, "Oh, but if you want to," he said, "I really didn't tell you any of the exciting things."
And
he's so modest, and such a
very gentleman. Modest.
Uh-huh. Yeah, such a gentleman. And I just got one of the nicest interviews from him.
Yes, you would have.
And he was a man who'd been on his own all the
morning.
Good morning.
Oh, here he gets up for breakfast in the middle of the day. Yes.
Your grandfather died of
pneumonia.
Pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have very many of his volumes or books or?
No, they were all given to the archives.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's nice that you would part with them and put them in a safe place.
Well, yes, they're there. My step-grandmother gave them everything.
Mm-hmm.
But all I have of my grandfather's is his violin. My sister has the piano. And I had my uncle's violin, which I've given to my nephew. But I value that just mm-hmm. beyond.
Did you play the violin?
I played the violin for years.
Yeah. I met a man in Livengood, which is north of Fairbanks. He's 94. And he came to Alaska, I'm not certain when he came, I think it was 1904, we went into the Tanana Valley in mm-hmm. Alaska. And we went over there for his birthday. We had a little surprise birthday party for him.
Very nice.
Three of us drove over. And he played the violin. Well, it was the fiddle. He wasn't a violinist. He was a fiddler at the Quadro dances. And I don't think he'd had that fiddle out for a long, long time. But we encouraged him to play one or two, just a couple of tunes, which he did.
Mm-hmm.
And before, of course, we had taken over a pint of Calvert, and we'd have passed the bottle around once or twice. And he limbered up his fingers enough and tuned up the fiddle.
The way he went.
He played those tunes. I have a tape of it.
Oh, how lovely.
I kept the beat with his foot, mm-hmm. and it's just beautiful, you know. It's pretty squeaky in places, but he remembered the Highland Fling, the Irish Washerwoman, the other quadro dances. Those were quadro dances. Of course, we called them square dances now in the United States, at any rate. That was really lovely.
But I must tell you this story. It has come down. When Grandpa was on the farm, he was not going to be a farmer. That was all there was to it. And his brother